Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Ian, while it's certainly not the convention most grassroots conservatives were hoping for, it has certainly not been dull, scripted, and all those other things. And what we got on Wednesday night was another one of those moments. First, we had the roll call fun. Then we had the flap over Melania's speech. Tuesday night went pretty much according to form. Then came Wednesday night. Mike Pence was the highlight of the evening, the featured speaker of the evening, I should probably say. And he gave a great speech. We'll talk about that a little bit in the second martini, but he's not the bad part of it. But the one thing everybody's buzzing about today is the speech by Ted Cruz, who, of course, finished with the second most number of delegates in the 2016 primary. Eliana Johnson had scooped that there would probably not be an endorsement in this speech. I'm guessing a lot of the delegates in that hall didn't read her article, but there were a couple different moments where Ted Cruz kind of put the delegates on a roller coaster, starting right in the very beginning when he said this.
I want to congratulate Donald Trump on winning the nomination last night.
And so the crowd goes nuts, and here's his very next line.
And like each of you, I want to see the principles that our party believes prevail in November.
So that should have been people's first clue that either this was he was going to make you wait for it or it wasn't coming at all. Then he gave a pretty powerful speech talking about one of the police officers killed in Dallas, talking about the need to fight for freedom and that we are unique in the world because the government ought to be constrained by the people in this country. At least that's the way the founders intended it. And then he came to this line.
And to those listening, please don't stay home in November.
And that got the delegates whipped up again, all expecting a Trump endorsement, and instead...
If you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience, vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
Boo! Conscience! Faithful to the Constitution! How dare you! This was a speech that was approved by the Trump campaign. Nonetheless, you had the people that already hate Cruz, like Chris Christie and Peter King especially, saying that this was despicable and that Cruz was a fraud. Paul Manafort said he broke his promise. Cruz explaining this morning that the vow to support the nominee ended when Trump went after Heidi and accused his dad of being part of the JFK assassination conspiracy. Ian, a lot to unpack here. I think a lot of grassroots conservatives that don't like Trump are proud that at least some conservative stood their ground on this front and didn't endorse him. Might be damaging towards his long-term career, but we just don't know that yet. But fascinating development Wednesday night.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So it's just enormously rich, I have to say, for people who complain, you know, anchors and commentators and the rest, who complain every cycle that, you know, we get these conventions that are infomercials, that are theater staged down to the letters of the speeches. It's rich for them now to be complaining that we have this extraordinarily dramatic moment, which we did. And you had, you know, people who've been doing this for a long, long time saying this is certainly one of the most dramatic moments in a political convention in decades. And there's no question about that. It's hard to know where to start, but a couple things. First, as you rightly point out, Greg, the key here is that Cruz came out and made a point of basically upholding his honor. And maybe that serves him well in 2020. Maybe it doesn't. But he walks out of Cleveland with his head held high and a lot of people happy with him. And, you know, depending on how this goes, you know, he'll probably be vindicated in a certain respect. There's certainly an element in which, and I think this is important to keep in mind, this was not a speech for the delegates in the room. This was not for them. And you saw that when Cruz sort of powered through the boos and the cacophony to give what was still a very, very good speech, you know, directly into the camera. This was not about the people in the room. This was about everyone else, you know, millions of people watching from home. for them, I think, you know, it was extremely powerful. And, you know, the power of it and perhaps the courage of it was amplified by the reaction in the room. Cruz, I think, understood that as it was happening. The fact that this is such a big story, which I think it would have been either way, but the fact of how big it is in part because the Trump campaign and the RNC made an enormous tactical mistake, which was to boo ruckusly and then have all of the Trump surrogates and Trump on Twitter this morning and the rest go after Cruz. If everyone in the room had simply clapped politely, there would have been, I think, a sort of consensus, a sort of just ambient thought that this was basically an endorsement. But in fact, by reacting the way they did, they amplified exactly the point that Cruz was making, which was that not only was this not an endorsement, it was sort of an anti-endorsement. Look, this is, I think, a key takeaway, which is if vote your conscience is a phrase that upsets you, that's probably because your conscience has already convicted you. It would not be as clear that that's the case among so many delegates if they have reacted differently. But now you have this really stark division that is highlighted in the party because of Cruz and because of the reaction to it. So this really is just a lightning rod, and Cruz certainly stole day three. At least the reaction this morning from the Trump campaign and the RNC makes it look like they're going to cede day four to him as well.
I spoke earlier this week with Ken Cuccinelli, the former attorney general of Virginia, who was a big part of these rules fights that we talked about earlier in the week, and he's still frustrated about it, although he says he will vote for Trump. He says, unity is not to be demanded. Unity is to be achieved. And we have talked before about how unity is a two-way street, and it doesn't seem to be expected in one direction, only in the other direction. But before we get on to the second martini, I do want to ask you this, because I think it's fair to ask. If we like the nominee and we didn't like the person who came in second and they put on that sort of performance, so if it had been Cruz or Rubio and then Trump or somebody else that we didn't like so much had gone in there and given a similar speech, would our reaction be the same?
I don't think so. For this reason, that that Trump is a unique phenomenon. Trump is sui generis, and as I know I've said on here before, you know, part of the reason that Trump is such a problem is that he stands outside the 40-yard lines of conservatism, so to speak. Whereas if you had, you know, Cruz or Rubio or Walker, you know, or almost any of the other candidates who were in the race, who were the nominee, there would be a general consensus. And, you know, if Rubio and Cruz are really at, you know, odds and one of them had gotten the nomination, the other said, you know, vote your conscience, yeah, there would probably be a kerfuffle. But there's also the fact that there wouldn't be that much impulse to do that because, you know, to the extent that Cruz and Rubio represent, you know, different parts of the party, they are teammates in a way that I think a lot of people don't see Donald Trump being a teammate. And also, Greg, just to add on the subject of unity, this is a campaign that is just enormously thuggish, and we've seen that over the course of this convention, stomping on the rules and the rest. That wouldn't be the case in, you know, a Rubio campaign or a Cruz campaign if they had secured the nomination. So, you know, there wouldn't, I think, be the type of reaction just because you don't have the same sort of demands on supporters to, you know, prostrate themselves before the candidate. Summing this up very nicely, I thought, was John McCormick, who tweeted, you know, the beatings will continue until unity improves, right? Which is really the ethos of the Trump campaign at this point. And that's why I think you would see something very, very different had basically anybody else secured the nomination.
We're moving on to the second topic now, but before we call up the bad martini, Mike Pence gave a great speech last night. The governor of Indiana, who is now the vice presidential nominee, and I think for grassroots conservatives, if he was at the top of the ticket, if they weren't already on board and he gave that speech last night, I think there'd be a lot of enthusiasm for the GOP ticket right now. He talked a lot about his personal story, since a lot of Americans don't know who he is. Talks about what he's accomplished as governor of Indiana. Did a lot of promotion for Donald Trump, obviously. That's the role of the vice president. Talked about how he'd be superior in his estimation to Hillary Clinton in a number of different ways. When it got to national security, he did a very good job of indicting the Obama-Clinton record. He also came up with this line, which I don't think anybody would have a problem with.
History teaches us that weakness arouses evil. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's foreign policy of leading from behind, moving red lines, feigning resets with Russia, and the rise, rule, and reign of ISIS are a testament to this truth of history. We cannot have four more years apologizing to our enemies and abandoning our friends.
We're not going to abandon our friends anymore. Well, if you thought Ted Cruz kneecapped Donald Trump last night, Donald Trump's kneecapping of Mike Pence in an interview with the New York Times takes it to a whole new level. Here's just part of it. This is from the article. He even called into question, Trump that being, as president, he would automatically extend the security guarantees that give the 28 members of NATO the assurance that the full force of the United States military has their back. For example, asked about Russia's threatening activities that have unnerved the small Baltic states that are among the more recent entrants into NATO, Mr. Trump said that if Russia attacked them, he would decide whether to come to their aid only after reviewing whether those nations, quote, have fulfilled their obligations to us. He added, if they fulfill their obligations to us, the answer is yes. He was also asked about his opinion on Turkey or other authoritarian allies conducting purges of their political adversaries or cracking down on civil liberties. And he said, we have to fix our own mess before trying to alter the behavior of other nations, saying, I don't think we have a right to lecture. So, Ian, we've had this issue with Trump and NATO before. Pence was right. Trump has got to be making a lot of people nervous right now.
Oh, my goodness. This is such a disaster. I mean, as a political matter, you're absolutely right. I mean, the contrast here just couldn't be more stark. Pence is obviously in the right on this, and as you say, give a very good speech, which he deserves credit for doing, for sort of balancing a more sort of traditional Reagan-style conservatism with Trumpism. Now he's in for the real test, which is can he defend Trump's inevitable political belches? Like this, and that's going to be a real task. It's not clear whether he has the sort of capacity for glibness that Newt or Christie do. As a matter of policy, this is just unbelievable. I mean, we've seen, of course, that Trump has been soft on NATO, to put it lightly. We've seen him talk about how we need to be getting more from our allies. Is some truth to some of what he's saying, that there are things we need to be doing there are things that we can do that would help to strengthen this treaty, that would help it to be somewhat less burdensome on American resources? That's absolutely right. But that's stuff that happens behind the scenes. Getting those changes made, those reforms, are things that need to be happening between diplomats behind heavy doors. We don't need the absolutely wrong way to do that is to be publicly announcing your extortion racket under a treaty that we've had for decades, treaty obligations that we've had for decades. Vladimir Putin is not interested in Estonia as such, right? It's completely true that the vast majority of Americans probably would not be thrilled about expending American resources and lives on defending Estonia. But that's not the point here. The point is Vladimir Putin is looking for a way to show that NATO is toothless. He's willing to poke and prod and find a way to, show that this treaty is no longer effectual. And that starts the dominoes falling until sort of the consolidated Europe, a Europe that sits in the protection of the American umbrella, is no longer the case. And you can have a really a multipolar world where Russia rises as a great power, where China rises as a great power, and they they offset American power. That's arguably the long-term goal here. And so Putin wants to push. And effectively what Donald Trump has done is showed that if Trump is president, he can do that and there probably won't be serious ramifications. That's an extraordinarily dangerous thing to say. It highlights Donald Trump's approach to the world, which is his own sort of his own confidence in his ability to negotiate, the power of his own charisma, and his own ignorance when it comes to these issues. It's a really foolish thing to say, and it's of course probably going to be swamped in convention news, but this is every bit as important, I imagine people will argue.
And especially consequential, given another story that's been underreported this week, because we've been talking about First Lady plagiarism and all sorts of other things. But in the platform, this is from the Washington Post, the Trump campaign worked behind the scenes last week to make sure the new Republican platform won't call for giving weapons to Ukraine to fight Russian and rebel forces, contradicting the view of almost all Republican foreign policy leaders in Washington. Now, obviously, policy does not have to adapt to the Republican platform if this ticket is elected, but putting these two stories together is not good.
Alarming, to say the least.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, which will start bad, gets crazy, and ultimately is pretty funny towards the end. The protests have been pretty mild this week compared to what a lot of people expected. 22 people so far, according to this report that I'm reading here, have been arrested over the last few days, which is way, way fewer than most people expected. But here's the story from CBS News in Cleveland. Police arrested 17 people Wednesday after a melee broke out during a flag burning in the streets outside the Republican National Convention. The group that put this on was the Revolutionary Communist Party, and they said the burning of the American flag was a political statement about the crimes of the American empire. There's nothing great about America. Moments after the flag was set on fire, officers charged in to put it out with an extinguishing spray that some in the crowd thought was pepper spray because of similarities in the design of the canisters and the eye irritation caused by the fire suppression substance. You're on fire! You're on fire, stupid! A Cleveland officer shouted at a protester while firing the extinguishing spray. Two officers were ultimately assaulted and suffered minor injuries in this fray. But you know your protesters don't have a lot of candle power when they don't even know what they've lit on fire, especially when it's themselves.
If you don't believe in karma, I feel like this story should cause you to reevaluate. Because this is amazing. There's really not much to add other than it couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. This is sort of the glory of Occupy Wall Street all over again. This is really top-notch intellectual dissent right here.
And the fact that we should point out that nobody was seriously injured by lighting themselves on fire, which only makes the story even funnier, because if somebody had actually been seriously injured, it would have tempered the humor in this, obviously. But the fact that they're okay just means we can point out to their stupidity without any repercussions whatsoever. So that's good, too.
Precisely.
Ian, you are off. So we are so thankful for your assistance here the last few days. Thanks for walking us through the first 3 days of the Republican National Convention, and we'll talk to you soon down the road.
Goodness, it's been a roller coaster. Thanks for having me.
Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. David French will be in for Jim on Friday. Join us then for the next Three Martini Lunch.